This is a YUN interview with Ambassador Carlos Ortiz de Rosas on October the 30th, 1990, in Buenos Aires. The interviewer is Sutherland. So, Ambassador Ortiz de Rosas, I would like just first to thank you for agreeing to participate in this Yale Oral History Project on the United Nations. And I'd like to direct the questions today, if I may, to the process of the election of Secretaries General of the United Nations. And you were once part of this process and are familiar with it in any event, having served on the Security Council. I wonder if you could just, first of all, give something of the background at the time when your candidacy was active for the Secretary Generalship.
Certainly. Well, first of all, let me tell you that I wasn't truly an active candidate because I never hoped to be Secretary General. I never cherished the idea of my being a candidate. And it happened, it all started and ended in 72 hours. So out of the 14 or so candidates that were campaigning actively for many, many months, I was the only one who did not campaign and who enjoyed the whole thing better than anyone else, because everyone went through the through the difficult times of trying to get elected, whereas for me it started and ended very, very quickly.
This would have been in late 1980, right?
No, this was, I'm talking about 1971, 72.
I see, I'm with you, yes, right. Of course.
Yes. Now, how I became involved or participate in this was very extraordinary, at least in my experience. If you remember, in those days, the Security Council, of which Argentina was a member, was dealing with the very serious crisis, or the war rather, between India and Pakistan for what afterwards became the independence of Bangladesh. We were struggling to find a solution day after day, and the Security Council was really paralyzed because of the Soviet veto. So at one point, it was very late at night, or if you wish, very early in the morning, was something like 3 o'clock in the morning. The council was meeting on an informal session, trying to find a solution. When someone, I believe it was the Italian delegate, proposed a resolution that according to him would not receive the Soviet veto. The Soviet had vetoed something like 11 or 12 resolutions before then. This resolution was very aseptic in every point of view because the only request by the Security Council was that a ceasefire takes place. By then, the Indian troops had advanced deep in what is today Bangladesh and had the upper part in the in the war. Well, he argued that Ambassador Malik, the Soviet delegate, could not veto this resolution, which would achieve, if implemented, a ceasefire, stop the loss of life. At that point, I thought I ought to refresh the memory of delegates with what happened in the Near East conflict. And I said that experience showed that asking just to cease fire was not enough. One had to ask ceasefire and the withdrawal of all troops, all armies involved to the point of departure before the war started. I argued this apparently very forcefully because after my intervention, the Syrian ambassador who was there mentioned words to the effect of, you have spoken with the voice of the charter. You have spoken like someone that is truly has the letter and the spirit of the charter at heart. And you ought to present your candidacy to be the next Secretary General. I should perhaps remember this, remind at this point that the election of the Secretary General was dragging on because the council had met once to vote for candidates. And there were at that point something like 10 or 12 candidates. But no election was possible because, according to the rules of procedure, the candidate to be elected Secretary General has to have at least 9 or 10 positive votes and no vetoes.
Right.
A first round of votes had taken place, and Ambassador Waldheim had received the largest number of votes with 9.
Mm-hmm.
9 votes. But he had received 2 vetoes. He was followed by Gunnar Jarring, who was the Swedish ambassador to Moscow, with...
I just want... That's an interesting point to repeat that. His candidacy was vetoed by 2 votes.
Waldheim candidates?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
On the first ballot.
On the first ballot, I mean, yes.
On the first ballot, he was vetoed by 2 permanent members.
Mm.
It was known afterwards that these 2 vetoes was one China, and the other China wanted a third world candidate,
right.
And the other one was the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom wanted to protect the candidacy of Gunnar Jarring, of Max Jacobson.
Yes, yes.
So in order to protect the candidacy, he vetoed Waldheim and others, I assume. Well, next after Waldheim came Gunnar Jarring with something like 8 votes. A Chilean candidate, there were 3 Chilean candidates. One candidate then was Felipe Herrera, and Felipe Herrera got 7 votes. Sadruddin Aga Khan got something like 3 or 4 votes. Shirley Amerasinghe, very little votes. Max Jacobson, who was an excellent candidate, in my opinion, an excellent candidate, perhaps the best of the lot, he got 7 votes. So the only one that could have been elected was Waldheim, who was heading the lot, but he didn't have, he had 2 vetoes.
Could I just interrupt there again to ask, you were on the Security Council, were you aware that Waldheim had been campaigning, so to speak, for some time?
Waldheim started his campaign since January before.
Mm-hmm.
So he had actively campaigned for about 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
10 months he campaigned, he saw everybody. He saw me I don't know how many times. And I always thought all along that Waldheim would be elected, would be the candidate. I so informed my government that in my view the candidate that stood the best chance to be elected was Waldheim. So, well, as I said, the council had taken a first ballot with no results whatsoever. Then it was dealing with the crisis of the Indo-Pakistani war. I had this intervention. The Syrian ambassador said, well, you should present your candidacy because you have the charter at heart, and that's what we need from the Secretary General, something to that effect, which of course was heard by everyone present there, all the delegates. We moved from the informal meeting to the formal meeting of the Security Council. And I was chatting then, I remember this very well, I was chatting with the Spanish ambassador, Jaime de Piniers, who was also president of the General Assembly later on. And while talking with Jaime, the French ambassador, Jacques Kosciusko-Morizet, approached me. And he had taken what the Syrian ambassador had said very seriously. So he said that he had made some sort of sounding amongst the members of the council. And he thought that I would stand a very good chance at least to get a lot of votes, but most probably to get elected. So why do not I present my candidacy? I said, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, it's a Friday. There was a deadline set, was noon following Saturday, that is the following day, next day, to present any number of candidates. But at noon, the list of candidates would be closed. That was the decision taken by the council.
Now, when you say present the candidacies, who presented the candidacies?
Which? Well, he wanted me or Argentina to present my candidacy. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, listen, first of all, I don't know whether Argentina would agree to present my candidacy, the Argentine government, that is. Secondly, I don't know whether I would really stand a chance, as you say. Remember that I was then, I had been a delegate of Argentina for 1 year and a few months. So I was really just starting my tenure of office. So in any case, I said, I have to consult my government. And he said, please go ahead and do so. That was if I remember correctly, it was something like the 18th of, or the 20th of December.
Late.
It was summer in Argentina. So next Saturday, and it was a Saturday, I called and I couldn't get hold of any high official in the foreign ministry. Some people said, call the president. I said, I'm not going to call the president to explain this thing to the president. Most probably he's going to send me places because, first of all, he doesn't understand the procedures of the council. Maybe he doesn't. So finally, I could speak with the foreign minister. But that was in the afternoon. And when I talked to him, I said, listen, this, what I'm going to tell has academic value. That's it, because the deadline, which was noon, is already passed. But I was urged by the French ambassador and the Syrian ambassador to present my candidacy, so on and so forth. And he said, oh, yes, please go ahead and do so. I said, well, it's too late now, so I'm not going to. And furthermore, I'm not so sure, as they say, that I'm going to get so many votes. What happened? Then Kosciusko Morisse called me that night, and he said that he had presented, the government of France had presented my candidacy. He had called Paris, and Paris asked his opinion, and he said, well, I don't know whether he's going to be elected, but he's going to have lots of votes. So Paris said, go ahead. And my candidacy was officially presented by France and supported by Syria, but presented by France, right? This is the way my candidacy was presented. I assumed that the others presented their own candidacy. Waldheim, as I remember, did the right thing in presenting his candidacy, because he reminded everybody that the council's duty is to select a name, and not necessarily amongst a list of candidates. The Security Council can open the phone book and say, I want this one for Secretary General. And even if it's not a candidate, propose to any name to be the Secretary General, and then recommend to the Security Council, to the General Assembly. So Waldheim did not present his candidacy in a press conference. He said that he would be available. So he did the right thing in that sense. But of course, immediately his candidacy was actively supported by the Austrian government, yes, and all Austrian embassies. Mm. Well, that's the way my name came to be included in the list of names to be voted for the Secretary Generalship. But I started late. I was a late runner because my name was voted only on the second ballot. In the second ballot, I began well because I had 10 votes. Waldheim's 9, yes, or 10, Waldheim 10 again. No, I'm sorry. On the second ballot, I had 10 votes and Waldheim had 11 votes. Mm-hmm. But he still had one negative vote from a permanent member, one veto, which was the Chinese veto. The English vote apparently passed from negative vote to a positive vote. So he had 11 votes on the second ballot. I had 10. Then on the third ballot, I went and I was on top of the list. I had 12 votes with one veto. And Walter had 11 votes and no veto, because the Chinese veto passed, switched to an abstention. So on the third ballot, Walter was elected, although I had more votes than him. And the best explanation to the result that we had was perhaps given by my wife when asked by a newspaper man, "What do you think of the result?" And she said, "I think just marvelous." Walter wanted the job and he got the job. Carlos got the votes and I got Carlos. Otherwise I would have lost him to the job of Secretary General.
What happened to the candidacy of Max Jacobson?
Well, that was an impossible candidacy. In my view, most probably, as I said a while ago, probably the best candidate amongst all the candidates. He was an excellent Secretary General, permanent representative, and he would have been an excellent Secretary General. But he was a no-no candidacy, because Max was first a Jew. And I don't think neither the Soviets nor the Arabs were prepared to receive a Jew as Secretary General, although a Finnish Jew. Secondly, his wife was an active Zionist, a Jew and a Zionist, and his father-in-law had been also an active Zionist. And furthermore, he was born in a place that was part of the Soviet Union. So it was obvious that the Soviet Union would never accept Max Jacobson, although they were aware that he was a marvelous candidate.
He continues to be quite interested in this particular election and the fact that he was not elected, and at times tends to place the blame on the United States for not having pursued his candidacy with sufficient vigor. What was your impression of that?
No. Max was really very hurt by the results of the ballot, by his not being elected. And he was very bitter. He tend perhaps to blame the United States and so on. I don't think the United States had anything to do. It was a lost cause from the very beginning. Although, as I said, I think he was a marvelous candidate. But no, I don't think he'd stand a chance. He was very affected by the results of the vote. But Waldheim himself, let me tell you something for the record and for your research at Yale. After the vote taken the Security Council, of course, the Security Council decided to suggest to propose the candidacy of Walton to the General Assembly. Immediately after the vote was taken, I asked for the floor of the Security Council, and I thank everybody that voted for me, and especially so I thank those that did not vote for me. Because like that, what the obvious message was that they wanted me to remain in the Security Council and keep on fighting for the causes I had very much at heart. But then, as I went out of the Security Council chamber, I realized that there was really many delegates that were resentful for the results. Not so much because of my candidacy or my personality, but because they thought that the Soviet Union had vetoed a third world candidate that could have very well been elected, since that candidate had a larger number of votes. So there was a movement to object to the candidacy in the General Assembly floor. And there was a movement at least to vote in abstention, a large number of abstentions in the vote. I decided on my own that would be tragic, because if a large number of third world countries abstain in the vote, Waldheim would fall fell to be a prisoner of the five superpowers, major powers, the five permanent members. I thought this was the wrong move. So I decided to stop this thing. And to do so, I presented Mr. Waldheim's candidacy.
You did?
Yes. I asked for the floor and I presented Waldheim's candidacy. And I did a trick, banking that people are very gregarious in this case and they follow a leader or something. So I first spoke of Waldheim's curriculum, what he did and so on, not for long. But then I devoted the last part of my speech, which was a very short speech, to praise the former Secretary General, the departing Secretary General. So I spoke highly, which I felt very badly. So it wasn't great drama to do so. On the contrary, I did it with great pleasure. I spoke highly of U Thant.
Yes.
And when I finished, I said something to the effect that for many, many years the United Nations will remember this figure that will be such a marvel, that was such a marvel, Secretary General and so on. I turned from the rostrum, I faced U Thant, who was sitting in his place, and I began applauding. Mm-hmm. While I began applauding from there, which was a very strange thing to do for a delegate, other delegations began applauding. When everybody began applauding, then the whole assembly began applauding, U Thant, of course. Mm-hmm. So I left the rostrum, I went to the Argentine delegation, to the seat of the Argentine delegation. I stood up, continue applauding. The assembly stood up and continued applauding for a few minutes, 2-3 minutes. It was a standing ovation that U Thant got. But the presence of the assembly, I, in my statement, I requested the president that a vote would not be taken for Waldheim, and that he be elected by acclamation.
Right.
When I returned, and after the applause was over, the president, who was then Malik from Indonesia, he was the foreign minister of Indonesia, he said, after this applause, I take it that the assembly wants to approve the nomination of Ambassador or Mr. Kurt Waldheim as Secretary General. I applauded again from him. And everybody applauded and no vote was taken. And that prevented the procedure of the vote for the first time. For the first time in the election of a Secretary General, a vote was not taken. And like this, I frustrated those that wanted to vote in abstention.
That's very interesting. Now, in this whole period of the Waldheim campaign and the election, was there ever any discussion of his background?
Never. Never. The only discussion on his background went as far as to say, which I shared, the view that he stood a very good chance because, A, he represented a neutral country, that had neutrality was in the constitution of Austria. B, he had been a permanent representative, then he had been foreign minister, and again, permanent representative. And while doing this, he did really timed the attentions that he lent to one power and to the other, I mean, equal time. It was something incredible. He had this man, I saw him because I was ambassador in Vienna, you see.
Oh, yeah.
While he was foreign minister, I was in Vienna. And if he went to speak with the foreign minister, with the ambassador of the United States for 12 minutes, he would go rush immediately to the ambassador of the Soviet Union for 12 minutes. So I thought, many people thought, that he stood a very good chance because of this. And let's face it also, because as a personality, Waldheim was very grayish, didn't have any distinctive traits that you would say, but what a man. I mean, he has these and then he was rather grave.
Yeah.
So perhaps he was the perfect picture for what the five permanent members wanted and perhaps still want for on the Secretary General, I don't know.
Which is brings me to the next question, and that is, I think I know the answer here, but in this election, there was never any real discussion of qualifications as such of a particular individual as opposed to another individual.
Well, you know, I wouldn't know how to answer this, because as I said, I did not participate. The normal procedure, if one can speak of a precedent, was in previous elections that the five permanent members got together and they themselves had the picture of the delegate they wanted. I don't know whether in this election they did so. I don't think so, because it was one of the first performances of the newly represented People's Republic of China. People's Republic had just joined the United Nations. And the Chinese representative was Huanghua. And I don't think that they enter in negotiations amongst the five, as they have done in previous occasions while electing Secretary General. In any case, we, as members of the Council, we did not participate in such a consultations. But I understand that there was no exchange, at least as a caucus of the five. I don't think so. The Chinese told me, Huanghua volunteered an information which is interesting. He said that he had proposed to Ambassador Malik to enter a gentleman's agreement that none of the permanent members would use their veto power for the election of the Secretary General. If they did not like someone, they would abstain, but they would not vote against. And of course, Malik, the Soviet delegate, did not accept this, according to Huanghua.
That's interesting. This is a question not of the past, but just your views as to the present. As you may know, Brian Urquhart has just published a paper which makes certain recommendations about leadership in the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the main recommendations, which was enthusiastically endorsed by the New York Times, was that there should be a search committee established now.
A search committee?
A search committee.
Search for what? For a Secretary General?
Exactly, yes. Mm. That this committee would go around the world, so to speak, searching out the right candidate, considering the qualifications, and therefore, and then the results of this search would be presented to the Security Council. My question really is, do you think that anything like this is feasible or, in fact, desirable? Is it desirable to have a system where greater attention can be given to, let's say, the managerial capacity of a man who is being considered for the Secretary General position?
Ideally, I would think yes, that would be quite in order, that the managerial capacity of a Secretary General be taken, or the kind of perspective Secretary General be taken into consideration very much, because after all, the Secretary General is 80%, or he ought to be a good administrator. But I don't agree with my friend Brian on this question of a searching party for all over the world. I mean, this would add to the difficulties already in voting for a Secretary General. Maybe he's influenced by the fact that Hammarskjöld, whom he served faithfully, was selected like that. This was a miracle. But Hammarskjöld, when there was an impasse in the Security Council, someone said, bring a Swedish banker by the name of Hammarskjöld. The Soviets didn't know at the time even how Hammarskjöld was spelled. And they gave their consentment to the election of Hammarskjöld because someone made a very forceful case for Hamilton being having all these capabilities, and he did. He did. But the Russians, as you know, were not at all in agreement with Hamilton, and this was a disaster. But perhaps influenced by the fact, by the way in which Hamilton was elected, prompts Bryan to make this recommendation. I don't think so. I think the Security Council, yes, perhaps ought to look around the Security Council, and not necessarily, as Waldheim said, had to deal just with the list of candidates, because you may find at one point, for one reason or the other, that people that have ambitions and they are a bunch of mediocres present their candidacies. The Security Council look over a list of candidates, and if they know of someone, regardless of their nationality, that would be a good Secretary General, they ought to find and propose to him.